Weekly, we focus on the work of area individuals and organizations advancing inclusion and equity in our community. This morning from the Fair Housing Center of West Michigan, Liz Keegan. Good morning to you, Liz.
Good morning.
Thank you for you, Director of Education and Outreach, and Brianna Miranda, we'll call you Bree, Education and Outreach Coordinator, joining the discussion, Steve Chappell. Good morning to you, Steve.
Good morning, Shelley, and good morning to Liz and Brianna. We're very happy to have the Fair Housing Center of West Michigan here. And this segment is part of a grant from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, and we are working with a myriad of organizations, really focusing on looking at inequities in our community, how it can be a more equitable community, particularly for children and families of color. And we are approaching that in a couple of ways. We have hired our inclusion reporter, Michelle Jokish-Polo, who reports regularly, both through the video form and also audio. And then Mariano Avila is our producer. And in addition to regular news reports on a variety of issues, really focusing in on access to quality health care, quality education, employment, financial security, and housing fits right in there. In addition to that, we're trying to build capacity in communities of color, and we've trained leaders of color in organizing as a distribution channel, in decolonizing the narrative, and in media skills. And they've produced programming, which now we want to take into the community to spark change-based conversations. So we're really delighted to have the Fair Housing Center of West Michigan here to help educate all of us about discriminatory practices that may occur, what educational efforts and advocacy programming you're offering the community to help make it a better place for all of us to live.
Thank you.
Great. Steve, you had the first question.
Yeah, the one thing that really comes to mind is before we get into talking about the variety of services, can you give us an idea of some of the barriers that exist for citizens that you work with? Just kind of name a few of the barriers.
Sure. So what we can investigate is illegal housing discrimination based on certain protected classes under law. And the list of protections is pretty extensive. But for the purposes of this morning, I'll highlight we've had a record number of issues related to people with disabilities experiencing housing barriers, either accessing housing, being told they'd be too difficult to work with, or they're not interested in housing someone with a disability, or they're too disabled to live somewhere. We also have race-based or skin color-based discrimination happening in our housing market. That tends to happen in a more polite way where, oh gosh, the unit just rented, I'm so sorry, maybe try down the road sort of approach. And unfortunately, now we're also seeing an uptick in very blatant discrimination where some unkind or really bigoted things would be said. So that makes it easier to identify. And then we're also having our families with children continuing to experience barriers where communities set really high standards for children or create an unwelcoming environment for families with kids so that they don't stay in the housing.
I'd like to direct all of our listeners to your really rich, comprehensive website, Fair Housing Center of West Michigan. So I assume it's FHCWM.org.
Yes.
And on that site, they're going to see how your mission plays out in all of the various programming. And I'm just going to read your mission statement, preventing and eliminating illegal housing discrimination, promoting inclusive communities, and ensuring equal housing opportunity through education, outreach, research, which includes testing. I'd like to get into that a little bit.
Sure.
Advocacy and enforcement. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, really comprehensive approach. And you serve how many counties?
12 counties.
You mentioned the disability barriers for people with disabilities. And one of the testimonials on your site talks about some renters that you helped them get a ramp installed. Mm-hmm. And previously the landlord would not do that, I think, for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And then you stepped in. And also it talks about signs of possible discrimination, mm-hmm. A refusal to sell, rent, or show available housing. So they may call about it, get invited to a showing, and then they're not shown the property once they show up, mm-hmm. offering different terms to different people, mm-hmm. a statement that the dwelling is not right for your family, the dwelling has an available sign, but you are told it is not available. And it's quite an interesting list.
Absolutely.
And I think it opens potential renters' eyes.
Yes, and that's our goal. We really want people to recognize, especially in this housing market, it's very tight, and by its nature, it feels unfair right now. So we have to tackle that challenge of these differences in treatment that you did such a great job of highlighting with the signs of discrimination. It has to be because of a protected class. It has to be because of your national origin, your religion, whether or not you have children, whether or not you're married. We have some housing providers out there who are not providing equal service and equal access to everyone. So they're an equal opportunity bad housing provider. So for fair housing to come into play, it has to really be because of that protected class that you're being treated differently. And we have to be able to prove that.
Right.
Difference in treatment, the higher cost, the more hoops to jump through, and that's where our testing comes in.
And Liz, let's be clear. We were talking during a break that discrimination can impact rich or poor.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the first cases I was aware of was a bank executive being told he had too many children to live in a condo community. So he's certainly financially qualified, right. But they just didn't want a big family moving in.
But on the other hand, let's be clear, the Grand Rapids in particular, if we're talking about statistics, over 35% residents of color. But yet, if you read the racial case for racial equity in Michigan, a business case, I'm going to get that out one more time, because it is an important study.
It is.
The business case for racial equity in Michigan by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation in partnership with Alterum Institute, it talks about statistics and makes a case for how much better an economy, a robust economy we can have, more brainstorming, greater ideas if we have a diverse workplace. But then it has a tragic fact that we all need to work to turn around. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the average child of color in Michigan is born into a path of poorer health, mm-hmm. lower educational attainment, fewer employment opportunities, and greater involvement with the criminal justice system than the average white child.
Mm-hmm.
Totally disturbing and unacceptable, and that really impacts access to quality health, housing, discrimination. So talk a little bit about the statistics. Is it lopsided in fair in support of more of white families than families of color?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of work evaluating access to housing, and we have made strides in that people can see more housing, you know, with a real estate agent or a rental agent. But on the back end, when it comes to actually signing those documents to buy or rent, the access where the rubber hits the road, so to speak, is lower. So the treatment on the front end has improved because of civil rights laws and fair housing efforts. But I think there's a lot of unintentional bias, or sometimes very intentional bias, that prevents that actual transaction, that reality of that family moving into that community of their choice that meets their needs. Where we live dictates how we live.
This really goes back to the 1968 Act, under the Civil Rights Act of 1968, but part of that, Title 8 and 9, expand the housing, the Fair Housing Act, to include prohibiting mm-hmm. discrimination concerning the sale, rental, and financing of housing based on race, religion, national origin, et cetera. And so you came into being in 1980,
yes,
your organization?
Yes, here in Grand Rapids.
So
we
not,
were founded.
Not too many years after this.
Not too long
and
after.
You've been working to try to enforce that, mm-hmm. At least offer.
Yes. We really want to prevent it through education, and that's with the industry, but also with home seekers. They need to know their rights, and the industry needs to know how to comply with fair housing. We have a lot of good housing providers here in West Michigan that want to do the right thing, but a law that says don't do this isn't as helpful as here's some information on how you can provide equal opportunity in your housing. And we'll review advertising, we'll review policies, we'll do classes that meet the industry's needs to do some of that. And Bree does a lot of great work raising the awareness, especially of our high school students in our Writing to Right Wrongs program, about victims' rights, helping them understand when they're ready to move what their fair housing rights would be.
Mm-hmm. Bree, talk to us. Bree Miranda.
Yeah. The Writing to Right Wrongs project, we're in four high schools right now. three in GRPS and then one in the Godfrey Lee district, and we're in six classrooms. And it's just really empowering to see these students, one, find their voice, but also learn about the fair housing and housing transactions. And we were talking to Steve during our break, I said I didn't know about fair housing before I started this job. And so getting to these kids really young, and just teaching them, you know, they have these rights as, you know, tenants, it's really empowering. And it's empowering to see them also just learn the spoken word with the diatribe in partnership. So
Bree, I have to get a plug in for this outstanding university that we're licensed to, Grand Valley State University, yes. And you're a graduate.
Yes, go Lakers.
What was your major?
Public and nonprofit administration, and I got a minor in human rights.
A follow-up question to some of the research part of what you do, your organization does. We talked before we came on about testing, both in response to a complaint or just testing that you do. Can you describe the process and how that plays out?
So our testers are critical to the success of a fair housing center because we have to show that discrimination is happening. People don't want to believe it and they need data. And our testing, our volunteers help us do that. And we need a broad variety of folks that represent all of the protected classes, trained and kind of on standby to help us respond either to a complaint or, as you said, do random survey market tests. And what we do is we send out two trained individuals to visit a housing opportunity, let's say an apartment for rent. The only difference between the two would be the protected class. So if it's a race-based test, we would send out a white tester and a black tester, and they simply inquire about the same housing opportunity. Let's say we're looking for a two-bedroom, and their job is to literally write down everything that they're told, what kind of information they were given, pricing, how they were treated, how much time they spent with the agent, and what message they left with. And really, that's what matters. When we get those two results side by side, you can see the differences in treatment can be quite stark. One person left very encouraged with promotional information. They get follow-up calls. They get texts and packets in the mail. And our testers of color quite often are not given the same treatment, that same welcoming message. Sometimes they're told there is no availability when there is, or they're quoted much higher prices or more policies that they have to comply with in order to access.
Is there a feedback loop? Once you have that data, that's powerful. Do you ever share that with the property owner or manager?
We can in certain circumstances. So if it's a client that has brought a case to us, we need to follow their wishes. But if it's in the Fair Housing Center's court, then we have some discretion as to what we do with that information.
Shelley indicates that we're just about out of time, but I want to have you back. It's an open invitation because there's so much to cover.
Yes.
If you don't have safe, affordable housing, it kind of starts from there after healthcare. I want to remind all of our listeners that if you've missed any part of this interview in the Mutually Inclusive series, just go to the WGVU News Radio page a little later this afternoon and click on Mutually Inclusive, and you can hear the interview with Bree and Liz.
Right. Thank you.